Over 200,000 of the homeless people in the United States of America are women and girls. The most needed and understocked item in homeless shelters, feminine hygiene products. Joy Road Media is proud to tell you about the Clean Love Project. The Clean Love Project's mission is to help women and young girls feel clean, loved, and empowered by distributing Clean Love kits to alleviate their hygiene needs. Go to thecleanloveproject.org to find out how you can help. The Clean Love Project focuses on the Metro Detroit area, but it also distributes kits worldwide. If you are a female in need of a Clean Love kit, go to thecleanloveproject.org and request one today. Joy Road Media is a proud supporter of the Clean Love Project at thecleanloveproject.org.
I think I have to burp.
Of course you do.
Maybe I don't. I think I'm just always ready to burp.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Allison Bobbitt, and I'm here, as always, with my fantastic husband, Mike Bobbitt. And this is the podcast where we make one another watch movies the other one's never seen before. And Mike, this week, you made me watch Defending Your Life.
You made me watch. Why'd you make me watch this? You made me watch something I didn't like. Next time we'll watch something I like, but I can't believe you made me watch.
So Defending Your Life, Albert Brooks movie.
Yes.
It's about a man who gets into a fatal car accident and is sent to Judgment City, where he's assigned a defender to help audit his life. If it's determined that the person has lived a fear-based life, they'll have to return to Earth and try again. If they lived without fear, they can ascend into the universe. And the man meets a woman who seems to be his opposite, and a clear shot for ascension. They fall for each other. She, quote unquote, Angry Bunny wins her case, but he, Angry Bunny, loses his, and they're both on trams headed to their next stop for their futures. Mm-hmm. But he finds the courage to jump off his, go be with her, and the defense, along with the representative of the universe and the judges, decide that he is now worthy to ascend.
Yes.
So what did you think of it?
I thought it was cute. I haven't seen a lot of movies like it. If anything, there were some wrist cutter feels about it where, you know, you find someone in the afterlife, sort of like some kind of purgatory, you know, that you fall in love with.
Right. This came out way before this.
Yes, this came out. Obviously, Wrist Cutters would have borrowed from this but I saw Wrist Cutters first.
Wrist Cutters is actually based on a comic book called Kamikaze Pizzeria.
Oh, that
is right over there.
Yeah, it is.
On the bookshelf.
Very cool. I thought it was very cute. Because Meryl Streep is such an acclaimed actress now. Not that she wasn't before, but I'm not used to seeing her in just like a rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit like, what? What is she doing here?
Yeah, it came about because Albert Brooks was hanging out at Carrie Fisher's house.
Mm-hmm.
And this was around the time that they were making Postcards on the Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And Meryl Streep was there, and Albert Brooks was like, fuck it. Hey, Meryl, do you want to be the star of this romantic comedy I've written and I'm going to direct? And she was like, yeah, what the hell?
She was really good in it. I mean, of course. Albert Brooks looks like Steve Guttenberg's slightly dumpier younger brother.
That is the most anti-Semitic thing that you have ever said. And you also have a vision board full of hearts and Hitler.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
That is the most anti-Semitic thing you've ever said. And during Raiders of the Lost Ark, when all the Nazis died, you went, oh.
No, I didn't. Look, the two of them look very similar in that time period.
Okay. I don't see it.
Oh, my God. Every time Albert Brooks turned around, I was like, Steve Guttenberg. No, it's not Steve Guttenberg. Steve Guttenberg's a little bit taller. He's less stocky, but their faces are very similar and their hair is the same. So let us know in the Facebook group if you guys think that Steve Guttenberg and Albert Brooks look similar in the late 80s, early 90s. Like, they could definitely be brothers. Please, someone take my side on this.
You did say earlier, after watching it, that you felt that the Meryl Streep character was a little bit underwritten.
Yeah, but I've kind of come to expect that from older rom-coms, where the lead, you know, like the person whose story we're following is a man, that I kind of expect the women to be a bit underwritten because they're just kind of there to be perfect in everything they were ever looking for. Like, she's so hot, but like she's so smart, but also she loves rock and roll, and also like sports are great. Like, she's hot, but she doesn't know how hot she is. You know that shit.
Albert Brooks normally had a writing partner named Monica Johnson, who was his longtime collaborator, and this was actually the first thing that he wrote without her. And mm-hmm. I wonder if that's maybe why Julia character is kind of underwritten and a bit of a cliche and not terribly deep. You know, she's
supposed to be flawless. She's flawless. She's supposed to be this absolutely amazing person, but I still feel like I didn't really know all that much about her.
Right.
Like, you know, she had two kids. She died tragically, you know, as they all did.
Which Monica Johnson did as well. She died in 2010 of cancer.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm like, did she trip over patio furniture and drown in her pool? Because what if she did? Yeah. That's how Meryl Streep's character dies and before defending her life. But I mean, I still liked it. I liked the idea that you are given this opportunity to kind of talk about what you learned in your life, you know, and if you did learn anything, and if there was, like, I guess, meaning.
Yeah.
To the existence you had. And I really loved the idea that purgatory is corporate America. That's exactly what I would imagine it is it's just this ridiculous bureaucracy. I thought that was very, very funny.
I'm going to give you some trivia about it, and then I'm going to get into my thoughts about the movie.
Okay.
It came out less than a year after Ghost, so rom-coms about the afterlife were kind of in vogue at the time. Mm-hmm. Shirley MacLaine, Warren Beatty's sister, played the past life guide, which is kind of funny because at the time she was the butt of a lot of jokes because she would do talk show interviews talking about all of her past lives.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. Ethan Embry plays the kid who lost his art supplies in the movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's his first role.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Buck Henry, one of the greatest comedy writers of all time, he created Get Smart and wrote The Graduate, played the substitute defender.
Oh, yeah.
And he also wrote the movie Heaven Can Wait, starring Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
Which is also about
the afterlife. Yeah.
The afterlife. Rip Torn allegedly got his role on The Larry Sanders Show after Gary Shandling saw this movie and was like, oh, yeah, no, that's the perfect
guy
for Artie.
Yeah.
Albert Brooks is singing along to a Barbara Streisand song at the beginning of the movie when a bus comes his way and kills him. The song he is singing is Something's Coming from her Broadway cover album. And the song is from West Side Story, about two opposite characters who fall in love.
That's neat. That's very cute.
This is, I know how you like dark stuff, and I already told you this, but I'll tell you again for the podcast. There are two incredibly dark lines in the movie.
Yeah.
In the comedy club, which was, in fact, the Comedy Store.
Was it? Yes. I thought so. It looked just like it.
I kept trying to find verification because I'd been on that stage before.
Yeah, I know you pretty have. It's distinct looking. Yeah.
It was remodeled when Richard Pryor recorded live on Sunset Strip, and it has not been remodeled since.
No. There's mirrors everywhere.
Yeah, in the green room, the coffee table is glass and it's shaped like a piano. Mm-hmm. Basically, every surface in the green room is something you can do cocaine off of.
Yes. Yeah. So
they're at the comedy club and a comedian is just like eating it on stage.
Yes.
And he's trying to do crowd work.
Trying to save the set.
And he asks Albert Brooks, how did you die? And Albert Brooks says, on stage, like you. And that is how Albert Brooks' dad died.
That's right.
Right. And then when they're about to leave, Albert Brooks says, oh, I can't go. That's my dad. So the dad dying on stage.
Did this movie come out before or after that happened?
It happened when Albert Brooks was like 11 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not horrifying.
No. This happened when
prediction.
Yeah, when it's, he was a little kid.
Yeah,
and people say that he kind of works through dealing with his dad's death.
Yeah,
through little scenes like this in movies.
Yeah,
his dad his stage name was Harry Park. It was Harry Einstein. He died on stage at the Friars Club after roasting Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball.
Yes,
and he just destroyed.
Yes.
And Art Linkletter, like he was a talk show host. Like he hosted the Tonight Show very briefly between Jack Parr before Johnny Carson took it over. As soon as Harry Park got off stage, Art Linkletter said to the audience, every time he finishes, I wonder why he's not on air in prime time. And apparently Harry Park turned to Milton Berle and said, or asked, yeah, how come? And then had a heart attack and slumped over and died. And Milton Berle was like, is there a doctor in the house? And everyone thought that was a joke. It was not.
It's so sad.
Yeah, it was when he was 11 years old. His dad was 54. Years later, someone said to his brother, Bob Einstein, who played the Super Dave character.
Yeah.
He was 16 when his dad died. And he found out the next morning listening to morning radio.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So someone said to him at some point in time later in life, at least your dad died doing what he loved. And Bob Einstein said, what does your mother do? She's a housewife? I hope she dies scrambling eggs or washing dishes, because then she'd die doing something she loved. What a fucking stupid thing to say.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. Like, someone's dad dies incredibly young. You're not like, well, at least he died doing something. Like, no, you just say, like, I'm so sorry. That must have been really hard.
Yep.
You don't. And, that's so. Oh, my God.
Milton Berle and I can't remember. Someone else at the funeral for Harry Park wanted to do shtick and do funny eulogies. And Bob Einstein held that grudge forever.
Yeah.
Like I listened to one of his final interviews on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, and he was still pretty angry when all of this came up.
Yeah. I mean, even if your dad is someone who's, you know, like he's a comedy legend or whatever, you should probably still maybe read the room or not expect that, oh, they'll want to have a funny funeral. Because here's the thing. Funerals aren't for dead people. They're for the people who have to stick around after you're gone.
Yeah.
And considering he had two young children, not fully grown, not fully adults yet, really, maybe be a little sensitive and not do a bunch of jokes during their funeral, unless you discussed it with them first, you know?
Yeah. Gilbert Gottfried had like a memorial that was taped and available for a limited time. And I ended up not getting it. And I know that Frank Santopadre, who co-hosted the podcast with them, you know, said of it that there were laughs and lots of tears.
Yeah.
So I think it really depends on the situation. But it's the same, too. You know, Gilbert Gottfried had two really young kids. So you never know how they'll respond when they get older. But
I think it's the kind of thing where you kind of need to discuss it with their family. Like, what are you looking for today? Like, do you want to laugh? Do you just want to more? You know, I feel like, you know, a discussion that you have like with their spouse, they'll probably know what'll be best for their kids, you know? And I would imagine that Harry Park's spouse probably would have said, no, don't do a bunch of bits.
Yeah.
My kids can't take it right now. That's all.
We'll keep it in the Einstein family. Julia's prosecutor is Clifford Einstein, who is the oldest brother of Albert Brooks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he only did a handful of acting roles. A lot of them were like Albert Brooks directed a bunch of like short films for very early Saturday Night Live. And Cliff Einstein was in a lot of those.
Oh, fun.
And then for some reason, randomly, he's the surgeon in the Nicolas Cage, John Travolta movie, Face Off.
Stop it. That's hilarious. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I love it.
Pat Roach played the waitress for the breakfast that Albert Brooks was looking forward to. She was one of the leads on the TV show The Middleman, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah. I know I recognized her as a character actress. I was like, oh, because I've seen her all in a bunch of stuff.
Hal Landon Jr., who people probably best know as Ted's dad from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
His first movie role, by the way, was as the pencil machine operator in Eraserhead.
Oh, yes.
Which I don't think I even noticed that when we talked about Eraserhead.
I don't think so either.
He was one of the actors at the Past Life Pavilion, which makes me think maybe there was some stuff cut there.
Oh, yeah.
And then Greg Finley played the used car salesman, and he was like a big voiceover guy who does like some on-camera roles. Mm-hmm. His cousin was Rod Serling, creator of The Twilight Zone, which mm-hmm. I thought was kind of neat because yeah. this movie feels like it could be an episode of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Lee Grant, who played the representative for the universe in Warren Beatty's case, or not Warren Beatty, Albert Brooks' case, Lena Hall, she was blacklisted in the 1950s for not testifying against her husband for being a suspected communist and mm-hmm. did not act for years because she was blacklisted. And then she ended up getting cast in the 70s in the movie Shampoo, opposite of Warren Beatty. Which is kind of cool. There's a scene in that where Warren Beatty was being like an absolute diva and demanded that she play a scene one way, and she refused. She put her foot down because she was like, fuck it, I already lost my career once. What mm-hmm. do I fucking care? And she was like, what you want me to do, Warren, is not realistic to how a woman would behave in this moment. And she told the director, Hal Ashby, that she quit. She's like, fuck it, I'm not doing the role. If you want me to do it Warren Beatty's way, fuck it, I quit. So Warren Beatty caved and said, fine, play it what your way. What do I know? I'm only a man. And so she played it her way and won an Academy Award.
Good girl.
Yep. And we saw her as the widow of the murder victim on In the Heat of the Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And last bit of trivia, mm-hmm. that is my name droppy one.
Oh, of course.
Albert Brooks and Louis C.K. developed the cartoon The Cops, an animated show about the LAPD that got shelved, killing our chances of getting Spacebar picked up by Bento Box, the creators of Bob's Burgers, and crushed my Hollywood dreams.
I'm sorry, honey.
Yeah. So I have thoughts on the movie.
What are your thoughts?
Did not hold up as well as I had hoped.
I mean, it was cute. I didn't hate it or anything.
I didn't hate it either, but I think in this post-Good Place world,
oh, yeah.
it's going to be hard for anyone to tackle, especially in 90 minutes, the afterlife as effectively as Mike Schur was able to do in 4 seasons.
I would agree with that. This was a very condensed, watered down are totally opposite. This was a very...
No, they're not necessarily opposite.
The idea of the afterlife is so huge and so broad. So they kind of just took this tiny little spoonful that they could put together for a 90-minute movie. And I think that if they wanted to give it like more breadth and depth, it would have needed to be longer. It would have needed to be a lot more serious. It wouldn't have been as fun.
My biggest problem with it is the central premise of enlightenment being entirely based on fear. I think that is an idea clearly developed by a white person of privilege. And it's even touched on in the Afterlife Pavilion, where you see a native running for his life.
Yeah.
So because this native was not born into a life of luxury, that means he's not enlightened. That's awful.
Yeah. There were also only white people in the afterlife.
Yes. The afterlife, unless you wanted to work
remember.
In the afterlife as in a sushi restaurant or be a judge or Julia's defender, then you had to be white. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are people of color in here, but only in service positions.
Yeah. Only in service positions and only as background, barely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very white movie.
Yeah. And it can't be based on fear because there are a lot of fearlessly awful people
in
the world.
Fear. There's a lot of people who are afraid of nothing, including how they treat other people.
I mean, this obviously was written before social media when we, I think, really uncovered how
awful
people really are. And then it basically comes down to stage fright mm-hmm. kept Albert Brooks from ascending. like people's biggest fear is public speaking. Like there's a quote about how more people are afraid of public speaking than death. So at a funeral, people would rather be in the coffin than at the podium delivering the eulogy.
Yeah. It was flawed for sure.
Yeah.
Having that be the basis of whether or not someone's a good person is was only a tiny element to, you know, the show The Good Place, you mm-hmm. know. And really only one character was the one dealing with directly with fear, which was Chidi.
Yeah. I also got pretty angry in my research because Brooks tweeted that The Good Place, this was before The Good Place came out, it was announced. Mm-hmm. He tweeted, "The Good Place looks like they ripped off Defending Your Life. Maybe we should sue." But here's the thing. Beetlejuice predates Defending Your Life by 3 years. And that is also a movie that shows the afterlife as
corporate
bureaucracy. There's a 1941 film called Here Comes Mr. Jordan that does the same thing. Yeah. And there's a 1946 movie called A Matter of Life and Death, which is a romantic fantasy film set in World War II by mm-hmm. Powell and Pressburger. And it was originally released in the United States under the title Stairway to Heaven, and also has like a very similar...
The idea of the afterlife having a process or a process, it's not a unique idea, mm-hmm. you know, and having it take place in somewhat of a corporation, being a business of some kind, that's not exactly an original idea either.
Yeah.
Sometimes, every once in a while, there's a fragile male ego who thinks they're the smartest person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And their ideas are the most original ideas, and they don't consider parallel thinking or influence or any kind of humility.
Right. And Mike Schur has talked about how he came up with the idea for The Good Place.
Yeah.
He was driving in traffic and someone did something stupid, and it was a game that he had been playing for a while where he'd go, negative two karma points, you know, mm-hmm. and then he was like, oh, what if there was a point system, you know?
Yes.
He has never referenced Defending Your Life as an influence, as far as I know. But, you know,
even if he did, it's completely different.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So
if I were to remake this, here's my male ego take on it. And this is not an original idea because this is just a take on Buddhism. Mm-hmm. If I were to remake this and only had 90 minutes to get the story across, instead of fear, the determination for ascension would be the person's ability to lose their sense of self. Like, how much were they willing to give of themselves in the aid of others? Mm-hmm. How present were they? I'm definitely not an expert on Buddhism at all. You know, a Buddhist isn't so much a thing that you become as much as it's, you know, a thing that you study and practice.
Mm-hmm.
The tenets of Buddhism make more sense to me than...
Don't be scared.
Yeah, then don't...
Never be scared.
Live without fear, you know? I mean, and that is part of, you know, if you're living in the present, then you're not mm-hmm. worrying so much about, you know...
Yeah.
It's just, I really hate the premise that a person fortunate enough to be born into a life of luxury and pampering is more worthy of ascension than someone... born into a third world war-torn country where they have a constant fear of survival, or someone born here into poverty.
Yeah.
And they have to fear every day about, you know, having the basics of life.
It's not super well thought out. I think fear can be an element of whether or not you're a good person, but it's also one of those ones where being fearless doesn't necessarily make you a good person, and being fearful doesn't necessarily make you a bad person. So mm-hmm. it's a variable.
Yeah.
And it can really go either way.
But it's not the only one. On one hand, I feel like if there's an intellectual property that should be remade, it's this. But then on the other hand, I'm just like, you know what? Just watch The Good Place instead.
I'm going to second that, the latter part of what you said, which is just watch The Good Place. This movie's fine. I didn't hate it or anything like that. It was decent. I liked seeing Meryl Streep in a rom-com, but again, she's underwritten, a bit underused, you know, that's kind of normal. But I think that, I mean, Rip Torn is good in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's Rip Torn-ing it up. But yeah, I would say watch The Good Place because it is one of the best television shows I've ever seen. And the last episode I sobbed because it was so damn good.
Yeah, I was talking about this today at work. I didn't tell you about this last night because I didn't really want to go into my therapy appointment, you know,
just yet.
At
all.
I would rather have gone into it when it was just me and you, and that would be me, you, and our listeners.
Yeah,
but
right?
I had been going through a bit of a personal crisis, identity crisis, because Allison and I are realizing that we need to make about an extra $300 each a month in order to stay out of the red. You know, just having kids is expensive. Our house has gone up in value considerably, and our mortgage is about $400 more a month than it was when we moved in here 5 years ago. And, you know, life just gets expensive.
Yeah.
And babies are a lot more expensive than we counted on. And, you know, we made some poor choices. Like, I thought Affleck would be a good investment, but Affleck has taken every opportunity to fuck us in the ass as possible and not cover us.
Yeah, don't.
Stuff,
so. If you're looking for secondary insurance, don't get fucking Aflac because they're going to deny literally every claim.
Or read all the fine print. We signed up for Aflac through a third party representative that came to our office and explained everything poorly, and it has not been a good experience. So anyway, I started looking at trying to get more comedy bookings, and am finding that I am just a little bit too different for clubs because I don't want to talk about my wife is always shopping and I have to hold her purse when, you know, I took Allison to see Wicked for Mother's Day and I held her purse when she went to the bathroom because it made her life easier. And I didn't worry at all that one person would look at me holding a purse and go, gay.
Like, yeah.
I think if anyone looked at me holding a purse and thought anything, they were like, man, that's a good husband.
You know? Yeah, I can't say I've ever seen a man holding a purse and thought, gay. Like, no.
That's not the kind of stand-up I do.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be 51 very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And am finding that I may have aged myself out of a lot of the cool rooms I want to do. And also a lot of the cool rooms I want to do are giving more opportunities to women, to queer comics, and to comics of color. And if that means there is less spots for straight white guys, so be it. I am happy to be a casualty on that front, because there are way too many straight white guys trying to tell jokes. I think of the straight white guys that are the working class comic, I think I'm one of the better ones, but that doesn't change the fact that there are a lot of people with unique voices that should be given that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not that upset about it anymore. But I kind of, you know, was like, hey, the gigs that I have are the gigs that I have, and maybe it's time for me to quit. And my therapist was asking me, like, well, in a perfect world, what would your dream job be? And I was like, it'd be writing on a TV show that would be a comedy and have some sort of message about making the world a better place, like Ted Lasso or, you know, The Good Place. And my therapist just started going through Ted Lasso for the second time. She's like, oh, I love it so much. So after she heard my whole big, oh, poor me speech about wanting to quit everything and go out gracefully, instead of having people just be like, oh, look at the sad old fucker who she's like, you're Roy Kenting. And she's like, I'm so happy I just got to use a Ted Lasso reference in therapy. And I was like, I'm so fucking happy that you got to as well. And yeah, that's it exactly. So I developed a game plan and I'm not out. I have some other creative things I want to do. And I think maybe it's time that I start doing some of these other creative things that I've wanted to do for a long time. But taking stage time away from people who maybe deserve it more is not as high of a priority as it used to be.
Yeah.
I asked you right before we started to record this a variation of a question, which was if you had to defend your life and choose 3 days of your life to be submitted into evidence, what 3 days would it be? And I asked you first, if to determine ascension, was based on conquering fear? And then secondly, what if it was based on just being a good person? Mm-hmm. Do you have your answers or do you want me to do mine so you can think a little bit more?
I mean, I feel like at least one of my days about conquering fear would be having kids.
Okay.
Because it's a very scary thing to put your body through and...
Sex with me?
No, being pregnant.
Oh,
weirdo. I wasn't really that scared with Harry. I was mostly just like, is he going to be okay? Like, not that there was anything wrong with him. It was me, but he came
through. The joke you were making, because you were still doing stand-up when you were pregnant, was the size of my skull and being scared that you would have a son with a comparable skull and pushing it through your vaginus.
Yes.
But you had a C-section, so...
So it was fine.
Your vaginas is still A-okay.
It is. I had C-sections both times, which was much scarier the first time.
Yeah.
I think
I gave your vagina a Yelp review.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a Yelp page for my vagina.
Oh, there is now. Well, 5 stars, 1 review.
Thanks. Oh, God. Yeah, I think when you have a kid, it's very, very... I was so scared going into it with Benji in particular, because you're going to leave with a baby.
We never had one of those before.
And they're so small. Mm-hmm. And they can't do anything. Like, they can't do anything. You have to do everything. You have to do everything you can to keep them alive. And then also, like... how am I going to get him from the inside of me to the outside of me? That is very scary. And then he wouldn't get out. He just wouldn't leave. So they had to go get him. So that was pretty scary, because I've never had, like, I've had surgery before, but I've never had, like, this is going to take 8 weeks for you to recover kind of surgery. Like, that never happened to me before. So I was scared. I think that's one.
Along those same lines, one of my days that I conquered, one of my biggest fears was the day that you and I both decided to work on being parents.
Yeah.
That we were like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
Start spackling my walls.
Yeah.
The walls are the inside of your vagina.
Thank you.
The spackle is my semen.
Oh, hot. I love it when you talk sexy. I can't really think of any other days. I'm sure there are plenty.
Another day for me was the day that I told you that I love you. Because, you know, a lot was involved with that.
Yeah.
I had a life and was like, it wasn't a life that I was happy in. It wasn't a healthy life for anyone who was in that life. And it was very hard for me to say, I have an out for this life. And I know that my life will be happier and hopefully everyone's will be happier. And it was a very, very scary, scary thing to do. I remember exactly where I was at when I told you. And so that was another one.
Oh, honey.
That was a day where I was like, "This, I'm going to say these 3 words and my life is going to get much, much better. It's going to be very hard for a little while, but it's going to get much, much better." And then my third day is the day that moved to LA, because that was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was something I had wanted to do for my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And my 3 days for showing that I'm a good and selfless person, or capable of doing selfless things. I wish I was a selfless person. First day is the day that DJ and I turned ourselves into the police to try to clear up traffic, because the bomb squad had a big chunk of Hollywood shut down because they thought terrorists put a bomb on a light pole. And they weren't terrorists. They were me and DJ.
Yes. Who are putting it back on the light pole.
Yeah, putting it back. Another day is finding a doctor so I could be a good role model to our kids, because my dad was terrified of doctors. Therefore, I grew up terrified of doctors. My dad went to the doctor to die. And that was pretty much it. And I was like, that works for me too. But I didn't want our kids to grow up with that same fear. So I conquered my fear and see the doctor. And then my last one is starting therapy, because I knew I would have to do a lot of work in order to try to be a better person for you and for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
My therapist and I joke around a lot, and we have a really good relationship, but we also do a lot of work during that, you know. So she communicates with me very effectively in a way that I can divvy out the stuff comfortably. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those would be my days.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to do one of each because my brain is, I'm very, very sleepy today.
I understand. It sounds like I'm three times as good of a person as you.
I guess so.
I'll die before you. I'll put in a good word for you. Boom. Thanks. There's a fourth day for me.
Good job. How dare you? I guess if, I know I'm not a bad person, but it's weird to be like, yeah, I just try to generally be kind. Like, how do I, what day do I pick that?
Yeah.
You know, where I did something like extremely kind.
Yeah. You're genuinely a very good person.
Thanks.
I was texting with Alex, one of my partners for the Truthcast, and you know, we're doing a bunch of joking around, but I also told him that I do believe that I am an evil person who is just trying not to be. And he was like, no one's a good person.
No.
But evil is a construct made to make us feel guilty and keep us in therapy. And I don't necessarily
agree
with that 100%, but you know, but I get where he's coming from.
I guess, because now that I think about it, this has happened a lot where I've worked, where someone was in need of medical attention at work. Yeah. And I have been a lifeguard. I'm not certified anymore, but I was a lifeguard from 18 until I was 27, 28. No, 28.
But you were certified when we were in LA.
So 15 years I was certified as a lifeguard and lifeguard instructor and all kinds of stuff. So I've taken CPR for, you know, a million times, and mine's lapsed now, but I've taken it for so many years. I just kind of know it. And I have that, I don't know it, when there's an emergency, I'm kind of not scared to run and help.
Yeah, no, I was not. It's weird because both times it's happened has been at jobs where you and I have both worked there, and I was not witness to either of them. And afterwards, all the people who were just like, Allison was just in the zone. And it was like you had so much training that you just knew exactly what to do. You stayed calm while literally everyone around you was panicking and paralyzed with fear. And you were like, boom. We're doing this. You're making that call. Boom. Doing this. And yeah, everyone in both situations talked about how you just did it like a superhero.
I think that's a testament to how good all of my instructors were, where they really drilled into me and everyone that they taught. This is the process. These are the steps that you take. And I think maybe partially because I was young when I was learning that, it's just second nature at this point. I'm glad that I'm not afraid to rush into an emergency because, yeah, I think people do get scared because it is scary. I mean, like when I think about like how I feel in those moments, I mean, I can hear my heartbeat in my ears, but it like doesn't bother me until after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you are not normally a person who deals with stress well at all. And in these two situations, one was an older, kind of unhealthy dude. You know,
yeah, not super unhealthy,
but definitely one of those guys where you're like, I can't really tell how old you are because you're kind of pasty.
Yeah.
You know? And the other one was for a very close friend of ours.
Yeah. A close friend of ours collapsed at work and it scared the shit out of me, too. Like hers the most. You know, she's so young. You would never think anything would happen. And she was going through a lot and it ended up being, you know, something that was not serious, but everybody else just didn't know what to do. They were like, oh my God, oh my, like, what do we do? What do we do? This happened again in when I was in college. Like I was in an art class and it was a sculpture class. So we were learning like some welding stuff. And there was a guy who was in the class who was epileptic. And we knew that about him. So we're just like sitting there listening to the professor like demonstrate something for us. And I just heard something behind me. And the guy who was the epileptic guy, like just made a noise. And then boom, was on the floor face down having a seizure. And like the teacher knew what to do. Because I started to get up and go help. And he was like, someone call 911. And literally everyone else sat there.
Yeah, they say that you shouldn't say someone call 911. You should point to someone.
You say, call 911.
Yeah, you call 911.
Yeah.
Because otherwise everyone will be, someone else is probably calling. Yeah.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. So yeah, I think those things are probably where I feel like I was a good person.
Okay, I take it back. You're a better person than I am.
I don't know about that. I think I just learned a skill and it stuck with me and I'm not afraid to use it.
Yeah, it's probably a very rare thing. Also, it's kind of funny that you learn CPR to be a lifeguard and neither of the two experiences I was present for were anywhere near a swimming pool.
I only had to rescue someone one time and it was a little girl who was in the shallow end of the pool and she fell forward and it was a little bit too deep for her to push herself up and get her head out of the water, but her parents were like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
So that was the only time I had to rescue anybody.
Okay.
She was fine.
So in the Facebook group, let us know who is a better person, me or Allison. Follow us on Instagram where Allison posts lots of fun pictures from the movies we talk about.
Yes.
And, you know, if you want to, leave a review. If you don't want to, that's okay, because we're doing the podcast because we like doing something with each other.
Yeah.
And we are very, very happy that a bunch of you are listening, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Allison,
guys.
I appreciate you very much.
I appreciate you too, honey.
And my idea of heaven is being someplace with you and the family, and yeah.
It's a good one.
I don't really believe in heaven, but, you know.
I believe in heaven, but I don't think it's like up in the clouds.
No, you'd fall right through them. The clouds are just like vapor. It's water.
Okay.
You think heaven is in the clouds?
No, I just said
I
don't.
Have you never been in an airplane?
I just said I don't think that's what
you?
It is.
Did you before?
As a little kid.
Were you never in an airplane as a little kid? But
no. Did you grow up rich?
You grew up poor?
Not poor.
Well, obviously couldn't have hung out with Albert Brooks.
I know, right?
Hey, Benji, do you know about heaven? What is heaven like?
They like butterflies.
Heaven's like butterflies? Oh. Are butterflies like angels?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah? They're orange and black?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Daddy kind of believes that because Daddy had someone who was very close to him and she died and a butterfly flew at her funeral and hung out while the priest said the last words before putting the coffin in the ground. And then when he was done, the butterfly flew away. And that's why Daddy has a butterfly tattoo of that. That was pretty...
That was pretty sweet.
Pretty neat of Benji just now.
Yeah. He's smart.
You're pretty smart. Are orange crackers angels?
No.
I didn't think so. Okay. But they're yummy, huh?
But it's not yucky. It's yummy.
That's right.
Benji, do you ever see people that mommy and daddy can't see?
Yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Where are they? When the butterflies are flying?
You can see that butterflies are people? Uh-oh, the butterflies are keeping him from answering these questions.
They're like, don't
old people are not supposed to know.
I love you, buddy.
Well, I was hoping to get some firsthand news about the afterlife through the eyes of a child, but I don't think we're any closer.
No.
Besides, now we know that butterflies are angels and orange crackers are not.